Blog Talk Radio.
Bang! Oh, he stares in the like eyes of the man who despises him.
And you see, this is my real mother. Said when I came out the womb, my little black sister raised in the air like bugs. And she was proud, because I was going to take after her and not give it to her.
Welcome to Flight 3D. This is your captain speaking. We ask that you please note the emergency exits and safety signs in the event our journey becomes just too deep.
All right, we're going to get into the language that I like. The Lord is powerful, right?
Super Nigga can't put a basketball down. He leaped tall, Super Nigga, in a single bound. Super Nigga ain't got no degrees, he ain't got no time for that. Street corner, crack houses, projects, his natural habitat. Super Nigga got super strength, speed, and agility. So it's understandable when the cops beat him down to the best of their ability. Super Nigga has no supervision. Instead, he has super issues. Between 17 and 25 super inches, used to satisfy them super
sisters. Well, they clone little black girls who won't die but fight. Well, they clone little black girls who supplement stamina for endless struggles to write. Well, they clone little black girls like Asada, Sonia, Tubman, knowing what they know. Well, they clone little black girls like Nikki, Zora, Mommy, Grandma. Orchestrate train.
Ain't nobody got more than us. Aspiring artists spit saliva in their palms, producing hits, making noise with their fists. Lanky limbros with afros break beats and pop lock on dance flows. Made a
let me talk to you for a second.
This is Master Griot Radio, channel 13 on your NBBTA internet radio dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day.
And I also want them to get the balance of being human, like the humanity in the artist, meaning like having sexual fantasies and going to that fantasies and being faithful, you know, love and my perspectives of love.
This is what dreams are made of. This is what dreams are made of. This is what dreams are made of. Still dreams. She went to a major university to major in biology, but somehow it's begun selling her anatomy. Her college degree was a waste of time, spending 4 years of financial aid to become a pharmaceutical sales slave. But she don't sell her physical, she sells her morals. No longer moving in the strides of this independence, but she strives by rising bricks. She prefers dealing with those guys who flip those bricks. Use cocaine to increase their profit value. Salutations to the beauty of the week. But deep down inside, she's a beautiful freak. Jaded by the past, claiming to need a thug in her life. Won't have sex unless there's drugs to make it right. Last man she dealt with is doing 25 a night. Testified against him about that very same night. But this is what dreams are made of. This is what dreams are made of.
Told her if she wants to be famous, she needs to make love to every Tom, Dick, Harry, Nate. Drop the locks and lose some weight if she wants to fame. Mind thinking she's too big for expression, needs to stay in her lane. Deep down, she's more Coltrane than Soul Plane. But she wants the money, the fast life, she favors the thug. Can't wait to spice up her life to find her flavor of love. Doesn't quite need a personality, no. Being educated won't get you a reality show, so she ignores the disrespect the ballers and hoopers said. After going in random houses and giving soup ahead, shedding her future away like Wall Street pork. Can't stand Manhattan, but she loves New York. And this is what dreams are made of. This is what dreams are made of.
So what are dreams made of? The size of the tires inspires a fatal attraction, a fatal distraction. Mind caught in the rapture of sex, money, and drugs. Replacing anything meaningful with some superficial love. The windows of our soul have been tinted with a smile so demented and the brain so intelligent. Nice guys finish last, so chivalry is irrelevant. She once tried to be celibate, two times got pregnant by accident. Willing to risk her life in the crossfire of bullets, the bags, the weed, the vials, the cracks, the time, and the system. That's her man, she got his back. If need be, she would become his Kevlar in a misguided galaxy of shooting stars. But that's when women with intellect don't respect intellect. Instead, they dissect the good guys and call them gay and soft for being too nice. Treat them cold as ice, but even ignorance comes with a price. But this is that glamorous life, that dangerous life, that glamorous life.
And this is what dreams are made of. This is what dreams are made of. In nightmares, watching the future fade away right there in front of her face. And deep down inside, she just wants to be embraced by mommy, daddy, VH1. So watch her run to any and every fantasy and endeavor. Just trying to have her best week ever. So she'll take Kevin to be Britney, Bobby to be Whitney, attached with the drugs, kids, and the bottle. When all she really needs is to be herself, to be America's next top model. A womanhood.
Osiris Intercede, a spiritual odyssey. In the cold, dark black of night, when late and early begin to merge, I heard myself begin to pray. Osiris, intercede. The man and his vixens have a hex on me. Somebody must have heard I was learning my history, and life ain't been the same since when I could no longer just swallow the stuff. Determined to break my will, hard going went from tough to rough. I need spiritual comfort now, because there's a battle going on inside. Too much knowledge and too much faith. Truth sifting through the lies. And I hear Mama singing hymns in the kitchen, amazing grace, smelling of collard greens and faith. How can I tell her what I know? While I'm still doubting as I go, Osiris, intercede. They say our religions of old were by heathen standards paganistic, but side by side, who can tell which is which? That's why I can't bring myself to take the communion, blood of my blood and flesh of my what? And I just won't wear no crucifix. But I'll still get up Sunday morning and accompany Mama to church, clap my hands, sing the songs, losing myself in the search. Osiris, intercede. Holy Ghost filled and heaven bound, how do I accept the Trinity when I was raised to believe that God was God all by himself? And yet he needed two more to make three. Something ain't right in these goings on, and it gets even deeper still, like the Bible with all its contradictions. Did you know the King James omits 19 lost books? It's so complete, it still ain't filled. That's why you won't make me believe I'm a Gentile, when Egypt was the cradle of all things. And the first known scrolls of their religion was found not too far from North Africa's land of kings. And don't think that Immaculate Conception was first heard of with Matthew, John, Luke, and Mark. Mother Isis completed the Thebe dynasties before Mary even heard the hark. Osiris, intercede. We know, of course, the belief in one supreme God was written on Ani's pyramid walls. So how can Snow Boy claim the right when his caves were decorated with stick figures of animal life? So is that a lie? Or just plain gall. And while we're on the subject, did you know that there's a coin in the Pope's papal office in Rome, minted by an early Caesar, on which there's a black Madonna on it? And while we're on the subject, did Jesus have a perm? Because if he didn't, his hairstyle doesn't fit and his color's beginning to turn. Because if he was a Nazarene, a sect of Hebrews, as my books say, the Nazarenes lived in the deserts of the Sudan, where blonde locks would have gotten in the way. Osiris, intercede. They even say nowadays that it's not cool to pray. Bending on your knees is in the old way, too close to the ground. Old-fashioned, I'm told. But say, what is humility, if not the willingness to bend and fold? So are rosary beads paganistic, like communions under a blood-stained cross? And I guess holy water, sacred cloths, and baptismals wouldn't qualify as ancient heathen rituals lost. And tell me, please, is the Buddha or the crucifix a graven image? Yet if I pay homage to nature and grow my locks, HPD breaks huddle and goes into scrimmage. Osiris intercede. Why is it that the dear good Catholics never pray to St. Augustine? He did write their bylaws and the Christian doctrine, so they should, or so it seems. But as he was a North African, I guess he just couldn't measure up to what sainthood was meant to mean. And where the hell is purgatory? On those same ancient mountains of old, where the Egyptians believed the righteous dwelt, dining on wine and fruit, cradled in the other world, on the navel of the goddess Newt. Some of them know the truth, evidenced by the bestseller The Iceman Inherits, exactly where the Druids come from and through whom Rome and Greece rose to merits. But they don't want you to know that Egypt is in Africa. So instead, they moved it to the Middle East. Of what? Thought if they float Heston down the Nile, that we never found out that Plato, Euripides, and Socrates begged admittance into the great universities of Alexandria to learn the ancient mysteries from our priests. Ah, but it's a guarded secret that snowboys seldom tell. And much of the knowledge goes yet unknown, covered by the stench of emancipated chitterling smells. Oh, Osiris, intercede. And so I think of all the sweet potato pie-making church women who were seduced by the pulpit's men, or all the saints gone by who really believed Jesus was white and that they'd rise up again. I think of all the prayers I prayed, or the Sunday school classes I had to attend, or how a simple faith must have brought so many through when they were faced with a hypocritical destiny's end. I think of grandmother's golden smile, so sure of how close she'd sit to her Lord and Savior, Jesus, admonishing us to be a part of it. I think of all the Christians who raped, lynched, and whipped, or how it was the Catholic Church that secured, launched, and sponsored the very first slave ship, and had the nerve to name it Jesus. I think of righteousness and Ten Commandments, of I and Holy Quran, Moorish intervention in Africa during the First Crusades, mass Muslims and masturbating nuns. I think of hypocritical saints, saved sinners and born-again Christians, mass worship via satellite, or the moral majority who see nothing, say nothing, do nothing, and sure as hell don't listen. I think of gods and religions, of sects and divisions, and Father Ra the Sun. Indian gods, Viking gods, Roman gods, Greek gods, Egyptian gods, Africa's gods, and the all-inclusive one. And I want to pray. I need to pray, hoping that the Creator hears my plea. Lord, God, Father, show me the way. Osiris.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Master Grio Radio. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time, and we welcome you to Industry Mondays, the business of spoken word. And we have a special guest here today. Today, our guest is Raymond Tyler. I call him the Don of South Jersey, spoken word, independent artistry. Hey, how's it going, Raymond?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you doing? And thank you for having me on Industry Mondays. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we thank you for being here. And I just want to let our audience know a little bit about you. First, he's a journalist. He's a radio personality on FM radio in the South Jersey area. He's also a promoter. He's an entrepreneur. and he's a poet. Those are probably just a few of his titles. But those are his titles that really are important to us today. And the real significance is because he uses all of his gifts and talents to really help build poets, to take them across various mediums and give them access in places they may never have access. And he covers poets, people that other people may never cover, and they may never get in the newspapers or get write-ups and things like that if it wasn't for Raymond. And so that is definitely why he is our guest to hear, because we're going to talk about what he does today is basically create platforms. He creates platforms and opportunities for poets using his talent. And, you know, as a journalist, he has contributed to magazines like Essence with his interview with Lida Leslie, The Source, Vibe, Props. He's also done some television shows, and his TV production includes Talk Entertainment for NBC 40, NJ's only network TV affiliate, and NJ is New Jersey. Write the City Beat column for Atlantic City Weekly. He's also been a journalist for Philadelphia Weekly. And between Atlantic City Weekly and his two radio shows, he has interviewed Oscar winner Monique, Oscar nominee Queen Latifah, King of Comedy Cedric the Entertainment, and a host of other entertainers, intellectuals, sports stars, and more. And he says he also likes to help other people as they pursue their life dreams as artists. But I don't think he's also. I think that's the main core of what he does. That's how I got to know him. And he created the Alternative Soul Awards. Again, another time when he's recognized independent artists, and including spoken word artists. And so that's enough of me talking about Raymond. We told a little bit about your background as far as what you do, but we're here on the radio and people want to connect to you. So they want to know, who is the person who is Raymond Tyler?
Who is Raymond Tyler?
Yeah, they want to know who is the person.
Despite what people may think about the fact that I've been blessed with the opportunities to do in magazines, work in television and radio, newspaper, and also, you know, being blessed with the opportunity to be on Industry Mondays, I am a gentleman who works very hard. And so I think that would be one of the first things. Well, number one, I'm blessed. Number two, I work hard. And so, you know, I've always wanted to be a radio personality. I always wanted to be in front of the microphone. Always wanted to present new talent as well as be talent myself. So I was blessed to be a talent as a poet and a spoken word artist, and then I moved from you know, just being a talent to also having a platform to promote myself and then promote other talent. Over the years, it's been a progression, but everything that I'm doing, I plan for, you know, just about all my life, and, you know, pray, you know, that God would give me the opportunities.
Okay. So let everybody know, where are you from? Where do you hail from? Born and raised where?
Born and raised in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Section of town I'm from is called Maryland Avenue, but you could probably fit the whole city inside of West Philadelphia or North Philly. I mean, so it's not, the whole city's about 2 miles long.
Okay.
So it's not, it's a small city with a lot of big city money in regards to the casinos now.
Okay. And did you always, as a child, did you always like writing? Did you always want to do radio? What made you want to be a radio personality?
Well, as a child, my first artistic inclinations were in the realm of visual arts, which is funny because earlier today I was out looking for supplies. I still do visual art, and I'm planning on doing something big with it a little bit. Well, big for me later on in the year as far as visual arts is concerned. As far as radio is concerned, you know, I guess the best thing to say is I come from a hip-hop mentality. So a lot of the things that I do and I have some proficiency at comes from being a part of that hip-hop generation where anything we got in our head to do, it wasn't nothing but a try. So, you know, if I decided I wanted to do graffiti, you know, I practiced until I got good. If I decided I wanted to dance, you know, I, you know, got up and danced and, you know, practiced till I got good. In regards to radio specifically, you know, I listened to all the radio greats from when I was a kid, like Frankie Crocker, and somebody who's based right there in Philly, Lady B Street Beat, you know. So I remember, you know, one of my highlights in life was when I had an opportunity to meet her.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first met Lady B, she was my camp counselor. I was 15, and she was my camp counselor at the Grand Settlement School.
That's funny. Was she doing the hip hop thing at that point or not yet?
She was probably about 2 or 3 years older than me.
Okay.
I don't know if I was 15. Well, they might have been about 15. But her, my neighbor, and he liked her. but her and my neighbor at the time were my camp counselors. And she might have just been hitting, she probably was a little popular. I know she was popular, but I just remember her as Wendy. And, you know, but it was soon after that she became popular. That's why she stuck in my mind. Because soon after that she hit on a radio. It wasn't much longer. I said, she was just my camp counselor.
Well, I know that as far as being on air personality, she was definitely an inspiration to me because she has so much energy. She's great at what she does, and then you know she gets to like introduce new music to the masses. I mean, I have the tape from Live After Midnight on Cherry Street, where she was the first radio personality to break LL Cool J. And he was rapping over his cousin, Taylor Rock's It's Yours. And actually the rhymes that he was doing at that time went on to become the single I'm Bad from Bigger and Deffer. But, you know, listening to her on Saturday nights and then after I graduated high school and started hanging out and going to Lady B parties, you know, those are some of the things that got me really, really interested in, you know, being a radio personality. I went from there to my junior year in high school. I started DJing. So then I was doing mixtapes. So, you know, since that particular time, once I started, mixtapes, I was sort of a junior, you know, radio personality already because now people are starting to hear my voice and I'm breaking new music, just not on the scale that Lady B was doing it. And, you know, we also had a local station in Atlantic City where I'm from called WUSS. And, they had a talk show called Let's Talk About It, which was a very big, another big inspirational moment in my life. I can remember being in school and tuning in to Let's Talk About It with Larry Hayes, who was the name of the gentleman. And, you know, just, I just like that connection that, that people made back in the day with radio. Radio was very important and gave me personally a lot of my knowledge of music. And even if it didn't give me a knowledge of music, it introduced me to a lot of music I've grown to love over the years. So.
Yeah, I even think about when I told the Lady B story, which I'm pretty sure you have a lot of stories, but also in my neighborhood, you know, was Will Smith.
Oh, Will Smith?
Yeah, him and Jazzy Jeff used to do the parties. Because then was the big thing, DJing house parties. You know, they was DJing house parties. And my wife had a girlfriend that used to date Jeff and all of these things. But, you know, you're just people, you never know who these people are going to grow into and who they're going to grow to be. But, you know, you think of that time and the richness. Howie Robinson with the Girls High with me. There's so many people I was surrounded by. I was telling my mom was watching. I said, Mommy, Howie was a cheerleader at Girls High. And it's just, you know, that, but I know you have a lot of stories like that. But first, tell us about the radio station. What are your two radio shows? So we can put that down, record that in the chat room. What are your radio shows?
Okay. Every Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m., from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., I can be heard on 91.7 WLFR FM. The name of the show is called The Soul Connection. And actually from 12 to 1, I do an old-school hip-hop and R&B show called The Wayback Machine. So from 10 to 12, The Soul Connection, we have music, underground soul, classic soul, a lot of fun type music, a lot of music that black people listen to that white folks don't think we listen to, like Phil Collins and the Rhythmics, stuff like that. We mix it up pretty good. And so that's what we do on WLFR from 10 to noon. And then at noon, for lunchtime, we do the Wayback Machine where we dig through the crates. You know, Philly, we play the Philly jams like EST, Three Times Dope, Bahamadia, of course, gotta play Will and Jeff, and so we get it in. And people, if they, you know, they can listen to that show worldwide every Friday from 10 to 1 o'clock. They can listen to me every Friday on www.wlfr.fm. And in between the music, I also have a co-host whose her name is Michelle and Nino. And in between the music, we discuss everything from what's going on reality television to sports to what's going on with the poetry scene and spoken word scene in Philly, who's coming into Atlantic City, and so on and so forth. So one thing with the Soul Connection, when you tune in, you never know exactly what you're going to hear. We just try and pump it up and make it interesting, throw some flavor in there and, you know, give it some spice. I might be sounding a little subdued and laid back right now, but the show is really nice. And
okay.
Then the other show I have, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So real quick, that's www.wlfr.com. F as in Frank.
It's W as in W, L as in Larry, W L F as in Frank, R as in Robert. FM. No problem. Just WLFR.FM, and that'll take you to the website, and you can hit the Listen Live button, and, you know, you'll hear us doing what we do.
All right. So will you give me tell us about the other show?
Okay, the other show that we have is called the Alternative Soul Breakfast Club, and we're on every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. on 96.1 WTTH-FM in Atlantic City. And that station can be, you can listen live on that station at www.961WTTH, that's a W like W, Tom T, H is in Harry, .com.
Okay. So that's 9061.
WTTH.com. Yes.
And that's Sundays from 9 a.m. till?
I'm sorry, Sundays from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Okay.
And with that show, we play a lot of underground music. We play classic soul as well, old school hip-hop. We throw in celebrity interviews, some poets, and so forth. We really mix it up. And give the people of South Jersey something different.
Okay. And the name of the show again?
The name of the show is the Alternative Soul Breakfast Club.
Okay. And one thing I like to talk about is part of what you do and why I'm just like in awe of you, because I've heard about you, heard about the Alternative Soul Awards. I've seen, you know, some of your articles. I first experienced your writing was when I was working with Quiet Rage, which was part of the Master Grio Project. They actually used your article as their bio. Here's our bio, the article by Raymond. But that's why I'm saying you write up on people who other people never write.
I'm sorry.
What did you just say?
I missed the last part. Because I objected. I said, yeah, they used my article as a bio. I should have got paid again for that. No, I'm just joking.
Well, no, honestly, I'm going to actually come to you about writing bios and doing PR work. You literally have written up on people, and it's not just them. Whenever I work with artists and I work with different people, occasionally I Google them to see what's out there, what's on, and I collect information. And, you know,
right.
So in my promotions, I can say, okay, you're noted here, you're noted here, you got picked up here, or you're not being picked up. Your name is not, you know, we need to get your SEO up or whatever. So I always periodically do it. Now that I'm managing Mrs. Betty's son,
okay,
I found you articles on him. And that's important that you have written on so many artists who have never gotten that type of validation. And it's very important. Artists don't understand how important it is to get third-party validation from what you do to get those articles, to get those write-ups and save them. So not only have you done them, you've done them in a format that they don't have to go make a copy and give me a copy, but someone can actually go on the internet, and you don't know how much you've done for the artist and how much you have helped them in their image and image building, because somebody can Google Mrs. Betty's son and you'll see an article come up that Raymond Tower has written.
Right.
And,
well,
Well, one thing I want to do is take it back to when you said you want to, reach out to me or hire me to write some bios. Just let me know. And if any artists out there wants me to listen to their package and I like your stuff and you need someone to write a bio for you, a press release, liner notes, you can reach me at RaymondCTyler@gmail.com. I'll be glad to take a listen to your stuff.
You said Raymond Tyler. Can you give me that again, Raymond?
It's Raymond C.
Raymond C. Tyler.
C is in chat. Raymond C. Tyler, TYLER.
At Gmail. And what should an artist? Okay. And what should an artist send you?
They can send me. Here's the important thing. I guess this is where we get. This is why you really asked me on the show to kind of educate artists on certain things. Send me your two best tracks. If you got three real good tracks. Super hot, sing the best three tracks. If you want me to write your bio. Know what your budget is, because I know what I'm going to ask for. Now, you know, sometimes we can meet in the middle, sometimes we can't. Know what your budget is and have a budget. Because you're investing in your art and your future and everything else. You would not go and attempt to build a home and you hadn't, budgeted for that. You wouldn't attempt to buy a car and you don't have money budgeted away either to make payments or to pay for a cash. So this is your career. I'm a professional. You want it professionally done. Have some money set aside, if you're an independent artist, for a professional bio. And I'm not going, if you're an independent artist, I know that I'm not going to kill you, but what you also need to know is that I've written bios and or, liner notes and press releases for Barbara Cherie, who went on to sing with Patti LaBelle on Clash of the Choirs. She was just recently on the dance music charts with Beyonce and Janet Jackson. When India Ari started her new imprint, I did the press bio for her very first artist, Anthony David, and, I can name a number of other independent and non-independent artists that I've worked with as far as, writing their bios and press releases. So, I'd be happy to do it. And, artists out there who need that, get in contact with me. We can work something out.
All righty. Okay. I'm also posting that. I've posted that information as well as in the chat room. And if you have any questions, you can call in to 646-716-7994. Again, if you have any questions, call 646-716-7994. So we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Raymond a little bit more on that type of advice. Again, like you said, he's a journalist. He's a radio personality. So we're going to talk to him more about artist development, about building yourself as a professional and about the various platforms that he can provide and how he can support you as an artist and other different things that he's done for various artists. So we're going to take a moment here and we're going to, of course, take a spoken word break because that's what we do here on Master Grill Radio. And so I guess we're going to listen to, just to go over our last playlist. When we started, you heard the MGP mix featuring Lois Moses, Bernard Collins, Tommy Bottoms, Just Queen, and Then next we went into the intro and then into a snippet of an interview by Tracy Lynn of Common. Then we faded into Dreams by Just Greg and Vision from their Forever Coming mixtape, The Poet. And then we went to an oldie back from about 2005, 2006, Osiris Intercede by Dr. Tamika L. Williams Witherspoon. So right now, we're going to hit a little music, as you know, we do a little bit of both. This is a hard to find piece that I came up on, and I can't even buy the MP3. I went to the store, I can't even buy the album. But this is from the soundtrack from the Black Panther, the movie. It's Frida with Aaliyah, SWV, Queen Latifah, and more.
We will not bow down to racism. We will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. I'm gonna
yeah. Ain't no time for resting on my laurels when every day is an oral exam. And for the next man, I'm a walking target. He want to drive me out of business and take over my market. He's sick of envisioning himself as me on poetry's red carpet. Sick of putting out bullshit CDs that barely seem to turn a profit. And it's awkward because this ain't hip-hop, so neither one of us got to be the hardest. And it's not that I'm the luckiest, it's simply that I know where my God is. Do the knowledge. We ain't got to talk about summers. I am the only spoken word artist doing the independent rapper numbers. Who else order CDs thousands at a time? What about the cats just happy to hit the road with 99? I am not peace on earth, but I am peace of mind. Spoken word is a small world, and a large percentage of it is mine. It doesn't matter who you are. If you own a decent system, my CDs make you want to pay off your car. I am not a star. I'm a businessman. I provide a service. I make my people feel like $1 million within a system that makes them feel worthless. Like I snatch them out of the matrix. Like I tell them, go get yourself a glass of water and take this. Like I tell them most of what y'all listening to is fake shit. Like I tell them the marketing studio time and their time is paid for by racists. And I know they hate it when I make them face it. But God gave us spoken word in order to give us the tools to get ahead. And our oppressor gave us that other shit in order to give us the tools to get dead. And they need it that way. And we need it that way. And we stand in line for the tools for our own demise. And we even seem happy to pay.
All righty. I am back on. I can hear again, Raymond.
Yes.
Okay, good. I can hear again. Everything just went deaf for me. I could not hear anything. Just everything went dead for me. I didn't know what was happening. So did Laurel play?
I heard Talam, I think it was.
Yeah, did play?
Yeah, that was the last thing
I
heard.
Okay, then. All right. Well, we're on, and we have a caller on the line from the 803. I think that's from South Carolina. Is that Curtis on the line?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, this Mazda Talk Curtis case.
Okay.
I could do a joint.
All righty. So do you have any questions for Mr. Tyler?
No, I thought this was a stint.
Well, you say you thought this was a stint?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have an opportunity a little bit later. Right now, we're just in the middle of this interview. And Mr. Raymond Tyler, he's a journalist. He's a radio personality. He does two FM shows. He does artist development, artist reviews. So right now, he's going to tell us a little bit more about the platforms that he provides and about developing yourself.
Okay.
And then if you do want your music, you know, you want him to send it in, you want him to review it, if you want to get some play on a radio show, he's going to give us all of that information, okay?
That's what's up.
So, you know, Raymond, so, you know, let us know, in your opinion, what are some key things, what are some tips that you have for artists, for independent artists?
Well, tips for independent artists. I think the first thing you have to do is believe in yourself 110%, maybe 200%. Because if you're not going to believe in yourself, why would anybody else believe in you? And you have to be honest about. You have to have people who are around you who can be honest about your music and say, yes, this is hot. You know, no, this isn't hot. Because at the end of the day, I get a whole lot of product. And I'm nowhere near big time, but I get a whole lot of product. And if you're not excited about it, if you don't think it's good, if you don't think it's absolutely the hottest thing out there, you know, what's going to make me decide to pick up, you know, your CD or, you know, punch listen on your MP3 player and then add it, you know, to a format that already includes, you know, The Roots, Public Enemy, Jill Scott. But we do add a lot of independent music to the playlist. There's a lot of great independent music out there, so I do want to hear it. But you know, always put your best foot forward. I remember I got a CD from a lady named Toe Johnson, an artist named Toe Johnson. Now I found her on MySpace. And even though she sent me her CD, she gave me guidelines for, you know, what specific tracks to listen to, which would fall in line with what I was promoting as far as the radio show. And, you know, she was right on point with that. So,
okay.
You know, those are some of the, you know, those are some of the tips, you know, really be excited about your stuff. Have people who can tell you when something isn't hot. What you don't need is people who are going to tell you everything you do is hot. And then when you send it in to me and it's not hot, I'm not really, you know, I guess the sad part about it is the people who have the ability to put stuff on radio don't have the time to sit and be patient with people who aren't professional or don't quite know what they're doing yet. You know what I mean? So if you send me something that isn't good, one thing I won't do is bash you. I won't, you know, play your stuff on the radio and then talk about how awful it is for 5 minutes. I know some people who do that. That's not the way I roll. But I don't have the time to sit and hold your hand and say, okay, this is what you should have done, you know, so on and so forth. I guess the one more tip I would say is one of the things that I do to try and help artists is I actually have venues where artists can come out and perform. I do two open mics every week. I do one in South Jersey called the Soul Connection South Jersey every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. I do one tomorrow night in Philly at Tasty D's restaurant from 7 to 10. And a number of artists who have come out have actually, you know, if their stuff has been good enough, take, you know, Tuesday they could, you know, I could meet them for the first time. And then by Friday or Sunday, you could be on FM radio being heard all over South Jersey. And not enough artists take advantage of opportunities like that. You know, that's kind of what disappoints me, that I run into a lot of people who say that they really want it and they're not willing to work for it.
Yeah, that was another thing that really brought my attention to you. I mean, well, you know, I've known you and people have been talking about you for years. I haven't, I'm just starting to get to know you for myself. But what I like is I've been working at developing effective thinking frames for years. That's been my focus since the 90s. I have a nonprofit called the Empowerment Foundation because, I don't know, that's just what's been placed in, that's what God placed in my mind. And so I always use the structure of thinking frames. And and I look at strategy. So because I see a lot of people do a lot of movement. I really got deep into the music industry part of the arts. At first I was working with visual artists with October Gallery. Then I went to the theater arts as the marketing director for Bushfire. Then we started our own theater company. And through the theater companies when I really started encountering spoken word artists. So like I said, I always like writing, but that's when I actually started encountering artists. And like I said, I already had a mission and a vision with my Empowerment Foundation about making the African-American arts markets more competitive with the European market. And so in that, and I always knew that one of the biggest problems with any black in business, because I've had a stand on 52nd Street, I've been there, I've been up New York, all of that, the biggest obstacle is I really believe blacks don't think it's okay to be black. They deep down they don't feel that. Therefore, when things represent blacks, like black businesses and black art and things like that, they're not quick to support because it's still something they have, you know, intrinsically that being black is not okay. And so that's when I came across a spoken word artist and I thought about the Master Grill Project and the power of words. That and these people that I heard, to me, they just had the most dynamite words, you know. And when I hear them, I'm like, man, if, you know, if my young people could hear that or if my grandkids could hear that. I remember one time I picked up my grandkids and I got in the car with their father and they're playing Biggie Smalls and they're 4 and under. Why they're playing Biggie Smalls? You know, I went into where they live, and that's all kind of music that's playing around them. But what if that you could blast a Just Greg or a Shyster or Kamika Williams or Lois Moses? Yeah. What if they were surrounded by stuff like that all the time? You know, what would be the other outcomes that would come out if they heard those kind of things? So that's like really what motivated me. And then when I saw what you offered
like,
with your radio show, when you gave
Shice, Quiet Rage, Michelle Mosley. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to hear her. And the bottom line is mainstream radio at this point in time is not making room at the table. Well, just as I'm saying that, I think Lady B and Tiffany Bacon are actually have been breaking a little bit of spoken word on their shows. But, you know, still for the amount of talent that you have in Philly, and let's be honest, you know, Kindred should be getting play all day, every day. You know, I don't know how many people from Philly know that the Roots' new album is going to drop next Tuesday. You know, so, you know, mainstream radio is still treating a lot of true artists, excuse the terminology, like bastards.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of it's an issue of control. Because now with the internet, independent artists, they can have more control over your music and more ownership, which means they can reap more money. And so there's like a battle for the, you know, mainstream to keep the control they had. And but what I thought was just so great about what you did when we went up and you had the platform, and I this is one thing I had to thank Damali for, because, you know, he brought us up there, and he told me, you should go into the contest. We didn't have a clue what was going on. We were just going with, because Damali said, come. We were supporting him, and, you know, Mel was supposed to be, you know, playing with him, and we like, okay, we got to get up here because they didn't make that last time, and so we just determined to go. We really couldn't figure out what was going on, but you had some talent there. You had some judges who could get some feedback. Then if you won, you won spots on the radio, and to me that's strategic because that's movement. You got heard. You have a radio show. You had the opportunity to play it, and you offered a commercial, which is promotional, which makes the impact much more. And it's such a valuable gift. And I feel bad that we haven't, because and that made me realize where we were. Like, wow, I got offered this, and I'm not prepared. And so I think that's one thing I feel is key for artists to really make relationships with studio. And to also budget money to go into professional studios so that you can have some professional, you know, you can have radio quality production, you know, available. Right. And a lot of hip hop artists do it, but I don't think nearly enough spoken word artists have access when they're ready to do a project. I think because they think of spoken word, and they are so afraid of going commercial. This is the big thing we've been getting. They're so afraid of going commercial that they don't do professional quality production with their project.
Can I say something about going commercial, please?
Yes, sir.
You mind?
Of course, please.
Yeah, you know, I hate to upend you because it is your radio show, so, and I'm just happy to be here. For anybody who's listening, for what it's worth, one of the reasons why I started my company, Dark Sea Communications, is because I want to, you know, as an artist, I want to go commercial. And what do I mean by that? I don't mean that I want to just mass produce my art for the sake of people who wouldn't normally appreciate it. But what I do mean is that in my lifetime, I've seen Sammy Davis Jr. and his wife have to sell gold albums to pay the tax man. I've seen Red Fox locked out of his mansion with a few of his belongings that they let him keep on the streets because of the tax man. Now, all these people, you know, had people who were supposed to take care of their finances and pay their taxes and things of that nature, but they didn't. All of these people, you know, and there are more artists that I could name, more artists of color, who don't even own their estates. You know, they may have passed on now,
but their family and relatives have to sue to get, you know, money to stay out of the poorhouse, while all these other people have bought their estates for literally pennies on the dollar. You know, maybe at the time, you know, getting $300,000 for your art may have seemed like a big deal, but now you don't own the right to anything you ever produce again. So I was mindful of all that when I got into this business, and I said to myself, that's not going to happen to me. And, you know, I'm not above producing work for hire. You know, as I said before, if you have an artist who needs a bio, if you have a TV show or a program or album that needs some spoken word, by all means, call me. I have a friend who's working on an album, and, you know, I think we're going to be working together as far as me writing some skits for his particular album. So I'm not above doing work for hire, but what I'm not going to do is sign a contract that gives the rights to everything I produce to somebody else. So I just wanted to talk about that because, again, a lot of times artists are so caught up in being artists and, you know, not being, you know, not wanting to, quote, unquote, be commercial, that they don't take care of business then. This is a business. And, you know, and especially when it comes to music, ask anybody who's serious in the music business, they will tell you it's more than 90% business and less than 10% music. So, yeah, you have to be mindful of all those things.
Yeah. Now, what's crazy, in the theater world and acting, they're taught that in school.
Wow.
But in academia, they're taught it. I think I from being around the theater world and, you know, all the arts I've been around, I think the theater art is probably the best education. I mean, I really think you can even come out with a theater degree and come out with employable skills because, one, they teach them it's 90% business, 10% art. They have to learn every gamut. You can't get a theater degree unless you have to act, sing, and dance, but you also need to know how to be a stagehand, how to do lights, how to do sound, how to do production, and how to produce.
Right.
You need to
Coming from a hip-hop background, again, I love that. I think the more things that you can do makes you more marketable as a person. That's one thing.
It also helps you understand your industry. Yeah, you should understand.
Exactly. There you go. Understand your industry. Myself,
you don't have to specialize in all of it.
Poetry at all. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, people, you don't have to specialize in all of it, and you can always, you know, hire people out. But even before you hire, if you don't understand it, that's where people can get over on you, or you waste time, money, and energy on poor work and things because you don't really understand what should be going on so that you can guide the process. Because as an artist, you are a business unto yourself. So you're the CEO, but you're also the worker, and you take on all these different roles. Now you can hire out an agent, hire out a manager, but if you don't know what a manager is supposed to do and what a agent and the difference between a booking agent and a manager and a publicist, if you don't understand that, a lot of times you spin your wheels. Like, I found that was a big thing when I worked with spoken word artists. They thought a manager was equal to a booking agent.
Yeah.
And I said, it's two different things. I'm like, you know, and they didn't get it. And they put more stock into a booking agent than into a manager. And I think that's where a lot of them fall short because what happened, they lost all their marketing. There was nobody out there.
Well,
they didn't have a publicist or a manager, nobody out there to market and promote them. They just thought, you know, get a booking agent, somebody to book me, but they didn't think what makes somebody want to book you, what creates your value.
Yeah.
And,
spoken word,
and so.
Yeah. Yeah, spoken word artists, poets, artists of any kind, a lot of times they don't understand. And this is something that actually took me a while to understand as well, is that you are a brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are an artist, but you are also a brand. And what makes, you know, what makes Coke valuable, Coca-Cola valuable, is not the fact that it tastes better than all the other colas. What makes Coke valuable as a brand is the fact that, you know, out in my game room, I have a Coca-Cola chess set that, you know, at one point in time, Coca-Cola was one of the hottest, you know, sweaters and T-shirt, you know, brands. The fact that, you know, in so many different TV shows, people are drinking Coca-Cola. People see Coca-Cola, and it's to the point to where even when you go into a restaurant and you order a soda, and you just say, you know, a soda, the first thing they'll ask you is, do you want a Coke? Or even if you, you know, if you order a cola, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, they'll bring you a Coke, or people will ask for a Coke, no matter, you know, what type of, you know, it could be Ralph's Cola. But if you put it in a Coca-Cola cup, you know, people are going to think that it tastes better. And that's because of the branding. Now, again, I think what artists have to learn is that you can make your brand more, what's the word I'm looking for? You can make your brand more valuable by the more things that you do, not just you know, poetry and spoken word, which is a very beautiful art form. But this is what I tell you. I started doing spoken word semi-professionally at the October Art Gallery in Philly back in the 90s. And I was there with Jill Scott, Stephanie Renee, Bernard Collins, Trapeda Mason. It was a bunch of us, Rich Medina.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, all of us work professionally in the arts now, but very few of us, you know, Stephanie Renee goes for almost years without doing poetry professionally because she, you know, she's shooting her documentary films. She still got the chops.
Yes.
But her brand
her brand name has moved beyond
just doing spoken word. Rich Medina travels the world as a DJ. You know, he can still do spoken word, but the name, you know, the Rich Medina brand name has moved beyond just you know, spoken word. And it's the same thing with myself and, you know, other artists need to come on with the come on. I mean, well, I can't say that. I can't tell other artists what they should do with their careers if it's not what they want to do. I can say this, you know.
Okay, Raymond, just one quick moment. We got a caller on the line. So I'm going to just bring them on. They have questions for you. I have someone from the 562. Who's on the line?
Hello? Oh, shit, it's your boy. Hello? Is that me?
Yes, I can hear you. From 562?
Yes, it's your boy, Urban Voodoo. I was just checking out your show, trying to enjoy a leisurely evening. I'm not sure the subject matter, or cause I'm not sure. I just was checking it in. What you got going tonight?
Hello? Hi. So you said you wanted to know where we were going tonight?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's an open mic night. I'm not sure. I was just checking out the show for the first time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. We may do a little open mic at the end. We're finishing up with an interview with Ray Tyler. He's giving out some advice for artists. And
I can use some advice.
Yeah. So if you go hold one moment, we also got somebody in from the 215.
Okay.
Who's on the line from the 215?
Miss Betty, son.
Okay. This is who, Chase?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I thought I knew that number.
I've been listening for about 10 minutes. I've been listening for 10 minutes about the branding and that different, you know, different things y'all was talking about, the branding and how the artists need to know, you know, the actual different duties of a, you know, manager opposed to publicist, opposed to booking agent. So very interesting conversation. I felt like a fly on the wall. I know Jackie very well. That's my manager and publicist, and I know Raymond Tyler, talented in so many aspects, and I know his resume. I know he already gave his resume before he got on, so it was basically, you know, a lot of conversations we already had in private that I was just a fly on the wall listening to it at this time. So I would add, for me, and y'all kind of know me, like, I don't know, it's something freeing for me as a spoken word artist, been doing it for years. You know, without fanfare, nothing else, just to see how people respond. You know, Jackie, we have this conversation all the time. I know I need to get up on my internet and having my music, my art more accessible to people to buy and everything on the internet. We have worked that out this year after years of you telling me to do it, asking me to do it, and just different things that I haven't done. But it was so – it's just so real just to see what would happen if these people never knew me from a can of paint and I walked in and did three poems and to see how they respond and follow. And for years I've seen this without – the machine, without the industry, without, you know, anything other than voice, heart, real connection. Watch right. People support me for years and years and years, and the following grow to something phenomenal that, you know, of course I wanted to be even more, because y'all both know me. My only reason I want a bigger platform, I mean, to be bigger as a spoken word artist, to have a bigger platform, for spoken word to be bigger, and then I'd be bigger in it. I have a bigger platform just to talk about what I think our young people, our single mothers, because that's my biggest target audience, to see it in existence and not just words, but actually see the words and ideas and everything that we complain about in our society, actually see somebody say, you know what, we fighting to change this, or we're working to change this.
Right. I gotta put it like this. I gotta ask you a question. You have a family, right?
Of course I do. You know that.
You have a wife, children.
Yes. Going to graduate tomorrow.
Okay. So, let's say God forbid something happens to you, and you're not around. And now, you know, your daughter has a daughter or a son or whatever, and they need access to money, and they're like, well, you know what? My father has this catalog of all this great poetry that he wrote. Oh, but then when she goes to look at it, Ray bought the rights to, you know, your entire catalog for $10,000, you know, 15 years ago. I'm using Shice's voice in car commercials, you know, in the background of movies. And, you know, when your daughter comes and asks me, you know, what's up with me getting the rights to my dad's catalog, I'm like, look, he signed the paper. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
But
the world is,
I'm not arguing with you.
If all you want to be
I'm not arguing with you.
I'm not
arguing with you. We're exchanging ideas.
Okay. You know, the idea that I'm trying to put out there is that artists should at least be open to the idea, or at least want to get some more information to make sure that those type of things, you know, don't happen.
Well, let me clarify, because maybe I've been misunderstood. I'm not opposed to making more money, economics, for my spoken word, or having that life to it. I was just saying to the fact that that was my aim when I went into it. My aim actually was, and I would make that announcement all the time, I volunteer the mentoring and the youth activity. I volunteer that. All I was asking people was to support me as a spoken word artist, pay, you know, compensate me when I show up at adult events, open mics, and showcase, so I would free up my time. Because anybody know, if I was not, if the spoken word had took on a light that economically I didn't have to go to work or go to work part time, I wasn't going to sit in the house and go to sleep for the other 4 days and only had to go to work for 3 days, or if I didn't have to go to work at all, I'd have been in somebody's rec center, in somebody all the time, which I'm already doing a balancing act. But what I would say to you is, we got two things. Malcolm died a poor, righteous teacher, and we love him for that.
Right.
Farrakhan has a big house, and we criticize him for that.
Exactly.
And they both serve the same purpose.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It does not have to be one or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying, because of the fact that it is a business, I think artists should educate themselves as to how they can protect themselves economically.
Well,
you
let
know,
me say this.
You know, even if you say, you know what, I don't never want, you know, I want all my stuff to be free of charge for everybody, always, all the time, like Dr. King's estate had been. But you have to know how to take steps to protect your intellectual property. And I know sometimes, I'm not saying you, but I know sometimes when you bring that up to artists, they're like, well, no, I just want to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just saying, yeah, we're agreeing that you can have, you know, you can have it all, but it does take some time. It takes, you know, having a good manager, a good publicist, and all that stuff. And the good thing about having a good manager and publicist and whatnot, then that frees you to be more free, actually, as an artist. Because now all I got to do is show up and hit the stage and do what I do.
But
and
just like
the manager would take care of the other thing.
Inside it for years, I had people come to me and say, I asked many poets to come out to this event. For years, not just one time. For years, I heard people say, I asked them to come and donate their time, and you was the only one that said yes. You was the only one to show up. And I don't begrudge no poets. I know these poets, and I know they still do their volunteer work. They just don't do as much. But after a while, it's almost like you're being taken advantage of. And I feel that because sometimes I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. But, you know, because, you know, kindness, you know, taking kindness is a weakness. But I would say this. I'm saying I'm not mad at anybody because dollars, pounds, just words, has a lot of economics behind it. Brothers and sisters at the Harvest has economics behind it. And that all these people, I didn't see Stacy donate the space to other people on other nights. You want to do something, a charity event, he either donates it to you or give you a dirt cheap. I know for a fact that the Harvest, 2-1 Focus 5, does free work. But because they don't do it every time somebody knock on their door, or pick up the phone or email them, and then somebody like, oh, the poets, they, you know, they always talk this progressive and free spirit. And when I asked them, none of them showed up. I'm like, well, they did show up. And how many times, if we keep giving away for free, it's like you're spinning your wheels, going nowhere. I might not be the kindest. I might just be the dumbest out of all of them.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think the problem that we have is the fact that. In a way, what we feel we're doing is so important, and you know, it has the potential to change the world. But even me, who is, you know, in the business for the business side of it, and wants to change the world from the changing the world side of it, I have a poem I just wrote a few weeks ago called "My Art Isn't Working Fast Enough," where I'm talking about the fact that. What we do as poets sometimes, you know, what difference is it making in the world when, you know, just, you know, the other day, today I'm watching the news and a 2-year-old boy is shot in Chester, I think it is. You know, and I'm looking at my poetry, well, damn, you know, if I'm doing poetry and my brothers are still shooting kids who look like them, who could be their kids.
I feel like so much, that's why. Early,
you know, maybe what I'm doing ain't working fast enough. So
let's think of it this way.
You know what I mean?
Let's think of it this way. How many people came to you and said, right, you help me. Some kind of way through your work, your action, or your deeds, say, brother, you right. help me. So whatever you we lost, like you say, it, we still feel as though we didn't move the mountain fast enough. We didn't change the world fast enough. But if we're talking about certain, we still have to be real about it. And for every time things didn't happen fast enough, and I'm dealing with that my same way, because when I came to Spoken Word and I was so in the youth, I still get the stories from down the way. But at right, the same time, right. if every young brother you might lost that you knew him when he was in Pampers, then you also get a young kid to say, I ain't stopped writing since I met you. So that's the right. that's the paper. But when we say, though, when we're looking for poems and songs to change the world, because somebody wrote a book and he handed it to me and I read it. It was like positive songs. People say they changed the world, but in so many positive songs written, and he haven't seen change in the world yet. But my argument with that would be, he was saying, can songs change the world, or poems? I'm like, well, I think they can shape and fashion the world. I think if we're looking with play over and over in the mainstream, they have helped shape and fashion the world, whether it be negative, yeah. progressive, or wherever we at with it. We watching kids that grew up loving Lil' Kim are now 20-year-olds loving Nicki Minaj. So music right. affected them. As I grew up and you grew up and it was so moved by Chuck D, Rakim, and Biggie, look where we're at.
Exactly.
So you can't tell me that music doesn't have an art, cannot shape the fashion
music
of mind.
Changed our world.
Say it again.
Yeah, music definitely changed our world, and the arts definitely changed our world. I don't know if you were listening back then, but I said one of the reasons why I knew I had to take the business end of my art by the, you know, and do it for myself is because of the way Red Fox got in the way Sammy Davis Jr. got. You know, they were fabulous entertainers, you know. And America could never pay Sammy Davis Jr. for what he gave to this country. They don't print enough paper money.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? But because of the fact that he wasn't on top of his business, his wife had to go and sell, you know, gold records. I ain't see Frank Sinatra's family selling gold records. I ain't see Dean Martin's family selling gold records. Mm-hmm. And they weren't half the entertainers that Sammy Davis was.
Or
so
didn't have to go the struggle that he had to go through.
Or went through the struggle that he had to go through. You know, so that's why I say, you know, am I still on a mission to try and change the world? And do I, you know, I do have kids who I've worked with who said they haven't stopped writing since they came across me.
That's why you're there. Adult
even. So God bless. But what I don't want to happen is for someone else to have control of the totality of my intellectual property.
Let's talk about that then. Every time,
okay. Real quick, guys, real quick.
Every time economic,
excuse me, guys.
Rock and roll, yeah.
I'm sorry, real quick, because you have some people in the chat room, Raymond, and Cheryl Sellers wants to give you a shout out.
Okay.
She wants to say hi to Ray, and she says, I think they can change. It happens one at a time. If you change one person's world, then you have changed a world. And just to let you guys know, that was something actually came up in my church at a meeting where people, I don't know, they made a real negative comment. And then somebody came back and said, because somebody was asking for education, and someone basically said, if you ain't got it by now, you ain't going to get it. But they're like, they said, well, why not have a workshop, even if it's just one person? It could be out of 100. If one person just gets it, that one person impacts a lot of other people.
So what if, like I say, what if the church was giving out for free computer class lessons, and then one single mother, who all she had was a high school degree and a little bit of work history on a resume, could add that to a resume, and then her world changed. See that, and that was what the church
right.
and what Christ was about, going right there
right.
to the people.
Yeah.
But one thing we want to talk about, the economics, and this scares me because I didn't see it when they first started saying it, but I see it now. We always talk about the economics, but once the economics got involved with rock and roll, R&B, jazz, the blues, from black artists, white industry co-opted, took it over, and gave us the checks. But they took the big part of the checks. And I remember they kept saying it about hip-hop. It's going to go the way of rock and roll. And I kept saying, no, this is so powerful. Because, you know, we talking about Melly Mel. I'm coming up in the Melly Mel, Curtis Blow,
yeah,
all the way up in there, too. And I'm like, no, this is our voice. Now, we ain't going to do with rock and roll there. And look what they doing it now. They done dumb it down and handed us checks. And that's what I'm scared about spoken word. If those folks find out that spoken word has this economic power behind it, because let me give it to you this way. Even on our, on a micronism, on a small level, I get, you know, the ACs, the Shysters, and a whole lot of other people still can do lyrical content and wordsmith poetry and still do some. But I watch people do sex and funny and poems about having haters, just like the rappers are doing, and the crowd would jump up and give them a stand ovation, and they would sell out every CD in their bag. And, right, you know what I mean? Right, so right. Already we already looking like, I'm going to give them, because when I first came into it, and I'm just speaking for 2004, I know Raymond goes to the 90s, people was coming to the venues to get away from the radio and the TV. Now it's like they're coming to the venues to hear a poet talk about the same thing that's on the radio and the TV.
Well, I'm going to let you know, be honest, as far as the industry, you know, because we, this is part of what we do is Industry Mondays, you know, part of what I had to do in order to even think about the Mastic Real Project, I had to study.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered why, you know, because I always love spoken word, and I love poetry. And, of course, you know, as blacks, we always had a strong voice. We always had great orators and everything. But I had to look, I was wondering why spoken word wasn't as popular. And I was looking at why certain people were popular when I could find people that's 10 times better than them, but nobody knew who they were. But in researching, you know, there's, it's just like the Baptist church. There's a black Baptist church and there's a white Baptist church.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing happens with spoken word and poetry. First of all, the first way they tried to separate us was through academia. I mean,
right.
Poetry at first came through academia.
Put that up at the, that meeting we had, Raymond. Stephanie Renee.
Yeah. And we have another one coming up, Beyond Spoken Word.
And somebody,
that's
going to
be
CDs
on the
27th. CDs versus, no, we're talking about spoken word versus poetry. And Stephanie is like, well, even before you was even thinking about spoken word, this was the separation. You walked in and signed a list, but you never was published.
Yeah,
but, true. I mean, even before then, like, as far as academia, I think, because, you know, we've always excelled in everything, but I think in the 60s when we had another renaissance and all, what they tried to do to separate our arts movement, they tried to illegitimize it and said it wasn't legitimate because it didn't fit whatever so-called parameters that the academia deemed in poetry and however, you know, iambic pentameters. But it has that. They try to separate it by rhythm. You know, they try to define it first, which they have a hard time defining it and defining the rhythm of it. And then the next thing they wanted to say the definition of spoken word was, then they attempt to, and this is one they're trying to run with now. Spoken word is generally by people who don't write it. And I found it online over and over. They try to allude that spoken word, you know, from the blacks come from these urban people in Seoul, and they, most of them not necessarily are writers. They just speak it. But most spoken word artists I know write first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the word, and it's the word spoken. It's not, we don't write it like a rap and all. But this is their way in order to define it, because what we don't understand, the spoken word industry, as they have defined it, is audiobooks, which is a $1 million+ industry, probably going to a $1 billion industry that we have no ownership in.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been very successful in keeping us out. I know a couple black people that have done some audiobooks. A young man that's part of the Value Tour named Anthony Stewart, he did and got the rights to do the audio book to Carter Woodson, The Re-Education of the Negro.
Ooh.
And
I read the Miseducation. Is it Miseducation?
Yeah, The Re-Education is Brother Kiefer's album. Brother Kiefer's album is called The Re-Education. But The Miseducation of the Negro.
Miseducation is The Re-Education, both by the same person, Carter D. Woodson. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But Anthony was actually one of the first blacks. He actually got the rights. He did the audio books, and, you know, he made the money off of that. But that's a big-time industry. When I first started doing this, I think it was 2006, when you Googled the internet, spoken word, that's all that came up with the audiobook industry. So now, with since Def Jam and they see the popularity, and Russell sold a lot of those rights over to HBO and all, they have been trying to figure out how to capitalize. They've been a little slow because the idea wasn't Russell's or Danny's. It actually came from Bruce George. So that was his passion. So they're trying to figure out how to capitalize. So that's why the slams are becoming so popular, because that's the place that they excel. That's the place where a lot of white spoken word artists, they've been having slams for years. They've been making money off of slams. So slams is the new thing. And it's not the new thing. It's really been around. But industry-wise, they're pushing that because they're more white, more white players. And even today, when you really look up spoken words, who's the one, who's making money, who's the labels and all, majority of the people are white and not black. So my goal and my hopes with
the Master Real Project
and Industry Mondays and all, my goal is that we actually create our own vertical paradigm. And I do realize it won't last for long, because the moment they see us making money, they're going to try to pounce on it. But if we know that's the action and the formula, what you do, you get it while you can. So we need to move from good to regular consumption to our own.
We living in a different time. The different time, and I'm thinking, I hope people are aware of that. It was a time that you needed to get the industry to pass your check. For years, we've been chasing the crossover. You know what I mean? Almost like Boyz II Men were so soulful, and then they figure out, oh, let's go almost Barry Manilow-ish. And everybody done it. Everybody, from Lionel Richie to sometimes Luther. Once they see they dominate the soul charts, and I'm saying that to say, it's almost always we looking for the industry, the co-signers to take us to these biggest arenas or arenas that we never played in. But right now where the industry is at and how it's been broken down and the way technology is at is – independence is the way to go. So you don't have to look at somebody sitting up there and waiting for them to give you a $100,000 check and take most of your publishing, to take, you know, just to co-op your whole voice and tell you this is the way you have to sound to get out there. Right now, you might get
Well, excuse me, the one thing that we have to do that's different, what we need to do that we don't normally do as a people, is we need to move vertical. We have a tendency to move horizontal across an industry. Like, just say somebody see you, oh, he hot, he just bad for the word, he makes money, he this and that. So everybody and their mother, it's like what I used to experience as a vendor of 52nd Street. Like, back in the day when the rats, I think this is in the 90s, they started putting, up in New York, they started putting saying from the rats on T-shirts. They were black T-shirts, maybe one line from a hot rap song. You put on a T-shirt. We were selling them things for $15. This was back in like 92, 93. We were selling 52nd Street for $15. And then when they finally figured out. And when they finally figured out where we were getting them from, other people started getting them. And then what happened, they were undercut the market. You know, so we were selling them $15. Then somebody started selling them for $10. Then somebody went as low as $8. By the time it was $8, it wasn't worth the profit. And then by then, we move on to something else new. But instead of thinking this, all right, that's hot. But instead of us going up to New York to the Koreans and buying them shirts, instead of somebody enterprise and say, hey, yo, you don't have to travel and go all the way to New York, I'll make them. And then we go to a local black person and buy them. So now we've manufactured them, and we've distributed them, and we went to the retail sale, all through black ownership. And that's the main, because, see, we're given the access through technology, so we don't necessarily have to go to industry. But we got to make sure is that we're moving vertical through ownership, that our distribution, wherever it can be, to make sure that it's black. And we're going from your idea to retail consumption with black ownership, and we're creating a vertical paradigm. When we create that vertical paradigm, that's how you actually corner market. And every ethnic group in the world has at least one market that they move vertical in, except for blacks. There is not another ethnic group in the world that does not move vertical in some industry. And
this ear hustling, a lot of information I've done over the years, that's one of the things they teach you in marketing 101, that you almost have this long of shelf life when you come up with something new. Because, like you said, everybody else is going to do it after you. If you come up with a new style umbrella, whatever you come up with, and you'll get a good run to everybody else, will make it cheaper, or they'll do the same thing and sell it cheaper. So it's like almost anything you get in interject into the marketplace, you're going to get a run into everybody else, figure out what you're doing. And either they're going to undercut you with the same product. Like you said, it was 15, I got it for 10, it's the same thing. Or they're going to bootleg it and sell it for 5, and that's still going to depreciate the value. So that's one thing that's true. But I think, just like I said, with spoken
word. That's true. But the thing about it is we got to move vertical. Like I said, the difference was we were going to New York, going to the Koreans who was bootlegging. They were bootlegging up there, but they were doing it there. But I'm saying instead of those, you know, all those people up 52nd Street, all those enterprises and vendors, nobody ever thought, hey, let me make the T-shirt.
Mm.
All they did thought was about copying. So we had this bad habit of going horizontal. But if we just take this movement, it's our voice. This is one time where we don't have to go through, like you said, we don't have to go through the industry to make money, to move. That we can do our own distribution. So, if, like, we come together and we make sure that we're distributing our own work.
The word you said, Jackie, was come together. Now, myself had came up with ideas over and over, and just because they were scared that I was in the forefront of it, and I love these cats, and I still love them to this day, the support was lacking. If I say to them, like, look, we all have open mics, we all have venues that follow, let's basically set up a store in all these venues and move it around. So the times that, just throwing out names, Just Great, you're not here, but your CD is here. Miss Wise, if you're not at Northwest,
then that's something we can
CD
do. But see, we have Raymond here right now. And see, that's the thing about what Raymond does.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, you were there. Remember when we went out to Jersey one time, like we haven't done this a million times. Come out there with Raymond.
Which one time?
When he had the competition, where he had the three judges, I think
someone.
See, what he offered the winning prizes when Mel had won was also that, you know, he has these three key platforms. He has radio, which is major, FM radio, that's major. Plus, they have websites, which means they can stream. So not only is it local to that area, it can be heard globally. So
we always complain about what's on the radio, what we don't want, and what we want, and the brother right there got it, and we still slow to move. But if somebody
now what Raymond is doing, and, you know, like, what's a good thing to support? What he's doing, he has very strategic platforms. He has the venue.
Mm-hmm.
He has the radio, and he has blogs. Blog it. People are starting to convert their websites to blogs now because blogs are much easier read on Google, and you get much better SEO. Text moves through faster, and they're converting even websites to blog formats. Raymond has two major blogs. He's a professional journalist, and he's a radio personality. He does FM broadcasting. And he actually does move the artist through. He even provides you with the opportunity for commercials. So what I'm saying is, you know, that's part of, you know, just what we're doing. We just need to make sure that we connect and support one another, which is something that we do, but just by sharing this, and it's something that we are doing. And like Raymond just blew it because he doesn't have the goodness of his heart, and he's just this major creative person. So, you know, he's doing it because of that, but I don't even know if he realized the importance and the impact of what he actually does.
Can I speak to that? I recognize the impact. Sometimes people don't think I do because I downplay it. Because unfortunately, we live in the kind of world where I don't remember if it was Chris Rock or if it was Dick Gregory, but they were talking about the fact that Oprah gave away these cars. And they were saying, you know, they took a break from the comedy to say, seriously, real talk, Oprah better be giving away something. She got to let those people think that she's sister girl and everything like that, because many people think that you got $5 more than they got. They get an attitude.
Speak.
They get an attitude. And that's why I started off by saying that I work very hard, because I don't want anybody to ever get it twisted and think that I was sitting at home one day and Philadelphia Weekly came and knocked on my door and asked me if I wanted to write.
Yo, I feel you so much.
You know,
that
don't happen. But this is what I will say. I mean, I do it. You know, I offer to help people from the bottom of my heart, because and that's why I wanted to have this platform to speak, because you know, real talk. There, I said earlier, you know, the Roots new album, about to drop next Tuesday, and there's people in Philly who don't know the Roots got a new album coming out.
Exactly.
So
you know, Drake dropped.
I can say to myself,
everybody knows Drake dropped
the Roots story. I could either write another Roots story, or I could check in with Carol Rick and see what she's doing. I could check out with Shice and see what's up with the Just Words anniversary. I could check in with Just Greg and find out what he's doing. And he, you know, his heat meat is pretty hot right now. You know, but. You know, that's not, you know, I don't just try and follow, you know, the Roots or just write about Jill Scott, who I love and is a friend of mine, over and over again, when I know that, you know, Shice is one of the few people that you can call on to come and talk to your kids, and he ain't going to charge you, you know, $5,000, $6,000.
It's funny, though.
To come out and speak for 20 minutes and say hi. So there's a couple
funny
things going on.
It's the funny thing, you know, the one time that we had so much mutual respect and we worked together over the years, but the one time that you did offer to pay me, I couldn't make it because Shakira was pregnant and she had to drive and it was raining that day. I was like, okay, I just can't make this. But I will say this, since you downplay it, that like I said, there's mutual respect. Everything just started because you was a brother doing stuff in South Jersey, and I needed to get to South Jersey. I was calling you, even though we met in Philly, and I kept saying, when you going to bring me to South Jersey?
I got to cut you off. But see, that's the thing. And that's another reason why I downplay it. I'm not going to be Puffy or Andre Harrell like back in the day. Like, you got to be all in my ball sack. No, I mean, look, if you say, you know, if you say that you in it to try and, you know, to move to another level so that people can hear what you're saying, and, you know, I got to beg you to come out to, you know, what I'm doing on Tuesday night. And like I said, like I told Jaggy earlier, there have been people who've been on the program Tuesday at Tasty D's, and then by Friday they were on the radio, on the FM radio. Mm-hmm. So if you know that I got that kind of juice, if you know that you know, every, you know, 3 times a week I get emails asking for stuff going on in the Philadelphia area from the Philadelphia Weekly. You know, actually, my inbox should be filled with more stuff than what I have. And I'm surprised that the artists who don't come out for their own benefit, even if they didn't like me, if you really trying to be super poetry, brother, you should be there. You know, you passed me your CD. They talk to you that it's short-sighted.
When, you know, I've been in this for a minute. The first thing most folks want to know at the event, how many people come out? What's the energy like?
Uh-huh.
And how much pot did they buy? That's the question they ask. But not to say to yourself, like, they don't understand. And this is what we talk about when you said knock on your door. And I was going to talk about that earlier. It's just love and respect and hard work that got me to where I'm at now. So when they see, well, tonight we don't have no feature, everybody's doing 1 or 2 poems, and then next thing you know, the host introduced me, and I wasn't even featured. They turn around and say, Sice, you do what you want to do tonight. This is your house. And I watched the poets just look like somebody just, they bit a lemon raw. And they don't understand the reason why that person said that, because they watched me over and over do this to a point that they're glad that I didn't even charge them to do more than 4 or 5 poems and not to do 1 or 2 poems. And I only say that to say I started out whatever it is and say, man, look, let me come in there and do what I'll do, and I'll stand in front of you as 10, 11 people. And the next thing the people say, no, look, this cat act like it was, when it's 10, 11 people, he act like it was 10, 1100. And the people like me, let me bring him back again. Let me bring him back again. And I keep coming back again. And then they don't understand why. Up and down the East Coast, there's love and respect for Sice and his brand of spoken word. Not because I only showed up at the big venues.
Right. I say a couple things to that. Number one, I've been, I mean, again, I don't go to a lot of talent showcases anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But when I used to go to talent showcases, I used to lay in the cut. And people wouldn't know who I was. They just think I was another cat to get my drink on in the crowd. And then when I see people who I like, I tap them on the shoulder and then explain my speeds or what I'm doing and do it like that. You know what I mean? So you could go to a venue with, you know, 2,000 people, but if it's, you know, 2,000 people who just there to drink and the Mac girls and the, you know, he's wearing the Flyers T-shirt and, you know, stuff. You know, what's the quality of that crowd going to be to your brand? And then the other thing is, if there's 20 people there, but and you've been to some of my events, you know, I have people there from, you know, in at one show I had a lady there who was a producer for the Today Show in New York City on NBC. I've had you know, one of the stars from Amen, Jimmy Walker's come through my joint. You know, I have a lady who regularly comes through my my programs, who also writes for Atlantic City Weekly and is on NBC here every week. So what I'm saying is, the people, a lot of the people who come through my joints besides myself are also in the industry, or they have the ear of people in the industry. And the only thing I'm saying is, again, you know, it depends on what you're worried about. Are you worried about how many people going to see you and think you fly, or are you worried about moving on to another level? Either way, I can't be mad at you. You know, and
right.
I want to say one more thing.
People being mad
at you for what you do on stage and the people give you, you know, more time or whatever, I come from a hip-hop mentality. If that's the way you feel, get your game up, partner. Get your game up, son. That's what I say.
Can I speak to that? What I'm saying also to that, understand that all those nice and small venues was reason why I got to the Clef Club, and it's 200 pretty people in there with the those people you're describing giving me a standing ovation. Understand why we go to the LaCour Center and they, Charlie Mack and them, filled it up and I know that's not Jackie, one of Jackie's favorite people, with almost 10,000 people, and they give you a standing ovation because I stood in the room for years and practiced my craft in small venues. So understand, if you're only waiting to get into the big venues with the pretty people, and understand the reason why you only got a moderate reaction because you didn't put the work in. And I say to people this, I can't be a hypocrite, because I put it on my page today. I waited 4 months. 4 months. I met this brother in Trenton at another spot, and he told me how much he liked what I was doing. He was from Newark, and he knew Lamar Hill. He went back to the Lamar Hill and Salam AC bogey days up in Newark. And he met me and told me how much he liked what I do, and he got a spot around the corner in Trenton. And I said, when I got a feature? He told me 4 months. It's going to take 4 months. I got this person coming, and I got you the next opening. Fine. I said, I ain't going nowhere. I looked up. By the time my feature came, I got bumped to special guest, and Talon was the feature. I'm not mad at that because I'm looking like Talon's reputation and everything he does proceeded and predates me. So I'm just looking like I can't be a hypocrite. For all the times that people looked around the room and said, everybody else doing two poems with that brother right there, y'all in for a treat, and let him come up. So I had to, you know, stay true to the same beliefs. You have to put the work in. You have to put the work in, and you're going to be in the room with people that put in more work than you. But the beautiful thing is some of these cats that I looked up for years, you know, we talked about that, the Sonya Sanchez, the lost poets, when they tap you on the shoulder, give you a hug like you're one of their long-lost siblings or little children, that's all it's about. I haven't met Amir Baraka. I heard his work. And I know you're a big fan of his work. I can't wait to sit in front of him and exchange poetry, man. And yeah, all I'm saying to say that is we got to put in the work. And I'm not the only one. And I will say this, calling names, Vision and Just Gray for years will show up, Damali, you know, Quiet Rage Days, and, you know, he goes in and out, will show up and give it their all in front of 10 to 20 people, just like they will in the full house. But I looked at some of these other posts, and I won't call their names. If it ain't no people buying CDs, they never return to their venue again, or they cash it and they go through the motions. And then they don't understand. I went to the Church of the Advocate, and I opened up for the last post, and it was a bunch of older people in there. They ain't had no heat, and they sweated these people out. When they called me in to open up for the last poets, the last poets already had their money. And they came and they did their thing, but I had to open up for them, and I looked around. I was like, ain't nobody here now. I went in like that place was still full. And I did what I did, and the last poets hugged me like I was their son, and a lady came up to me and said, I want you to come out to the African Unity Day in Malcolm X Park, which is a big annual event every year in West Philly in the summertime. And I got out there with 300 people. So because I didn't cheat those 20 people, I wound up in front of 300 people and wound up having this kinship with the last poets that he still can tell me what poem I did on that day.
And that's what I was saying. You have to. You never know who's in the audience, and you can't shortchange people just because. Well, you can, but you know what? You don't always get what you pay for, but you always pay for what you get. not to take Jackie's spot, but I got a Facebook hit from my friend Free Spirit. But as a matter of fact, me and Shice met at the Heat when she was hosting. She tried to call, but she said she didn't get an answer. So I hope she's listening. Free Spirit, I love you, and I want to say this on the record. For my money, I love Shice, and he knows I love coming through Just Words. But, you know, for my money, my favorite hostess ever is Free Spirit, because she brings so many things besides this energy. She just brings so much to what she does when she's hosting. I was, you know, I was blown away. So I just wanted to say that.
And I see when you posted that, and I will say this, and then, you know, people said, you know, some people said it was their favorite, some people said Sam. You chimed in Free Spirit. But I would say this. No, it's not about the favorite. And I'll give you that. No, I'm not even going to exchange ideas because we don't use the arguing word. I would say to my credit, where the people don't want to talk about, hosting goes along with promoting. And to actually get people in there over and over, retain people and bring other people, a lot of these hosts didn't figure that out.
Let me add this. Despite the fact that she has talent, and despite the fact that you have talent as well as a host, this is what I've never had happen. I've never gotten to the heat at 7:05, and Free Spirit wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And see, a lot of people don't realize you jack up your reputation when you do, like, you're supposed to be hosting a venue, and somebody come there, 15 minutes after start time, and then 10 minutes later you come rushing through the door. I'm like, wow, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I would say this. I offered another thing that I did. Not only do I beat most of the people to my own venue, I beat most people to their venue. I show up at people's venue, they tell me 9 o'clock, I get there before them. And it has been times I had to rush late myself. Well, I've been there setting everything up. But we're not debating this. I just want to say to other hosts, since we're talking about spoken word, how that we can advance it, is it comes more to it. And if I don't just show up on Thursday, I live just words for 7 years and I'm getting drained, and I hope it's a passive thing or passive phase, or it just might be my time to just move away from that. Love and shout out to Stacey Dollins. But I've been doing that for years, week in and week out. I show up on Thursday, and people just think this magically happens. It's a reason why we got some of the most talented poets on the national scene. And not only we got some of the most talented poets in the national scene, deaf poets, people that never been on deaf poetry, Talon, Lamar, Queen Sheba, Tommy Bottoms, all these guys, Black Ice, what's her name, George and Meade. Not only you got them, the last poets, but this is a place that most people got their first feature at. And I love to being a part of that. But at the same time, it's phone calls, constant internet, constant shaking the hands. And economically, for the work I put in, it is what it is.
Hey, man, listen, first of all, I'll put it to you like this. Just because I like Biggie, don't take nothing away from Jay-Z. It's just, Biggie's just that dude in my book.
It was just something
I want to talk about Just Words. Attending Just Words was the first place where it dawned on me that Barack Obama could really be president, because you talked about that when he was still a senator on stage.
We were talking about
whether he could really win and stuff like that. So what you do at Just Words is,
do you remember how they
fought us
on that? How that was one of the most heated dialogues.
Raymond, what was you saying? Raymond?
No. I was just saying, for me, Just Words is definitely an incredible an event. Proud to say that I performed and know the people who run the longest running weekly event in Philly, and maybe the second or third longest one on the East Coast. The only weekly event I know that's been going longer on the East Coast is New Eureka up in New York. And trust me, I know that you don't just go in there and click on the lights, but by saying that Free Spirit is my favorite, don't mean I'm saying it, but Shice ain't not.
That's not the way I took it. In case Free is still on, or she heard it. Right. That's not the way I was thinking
that's not where I was going.
I want you to know that's not the way I meant it. What I wanted to say and make clear to everybody else who was talking about the different attributes that hosts, that specific hosts and individual hosts brings, that wasn't talked about. And I wanted to, all I was interjecting. Some of these hosts that they were talking about don't work as hard to bring people in and retain them. And that was the other part of hosting promoting. Because if you're Talon AC, you're Black Ice and all that kind of stuff, the reason why you love coming to Just Words, because people are there and they're supporting you. Not because it's 10 people sitting in there and they love you as a person. They have to love the form and the platform. And maybe because I'm an artist and that's what I look for when I go to Trenton, Wilmington, Baltimore, New York, or whatever, where the people at. And you called me, you told me how much you love me and my, as an artist and my work, and then I get there, and I'm like, well, damn, did you call anybody? Let them know that I needed somebody here to hear me. That's and I think maybe after we finish talking about the personalities and the energy people bring, they have to think about their artist friends. And people say, oh, it don't matter, 1 in 100, giving the same show, beautiful. Because, you know, 1 in 100, we are going to be in the same show. But maybe we get 10 to 50 that's really there, know what they listen to and going to support. That helps out that the fact that those people in the seat won't come back and say, this was a magical night. And I understand that because for years, people walking out, and I would say, did you enjoy yourself? And they go, and I sit up there and say, come on, talk to me, be real. And they tell me what they like. I love Keisha, and I love Sam. I love Shakira, and I love Chris Cream. But the rest of them people, this, that, and the other. So I started to figure out what people wanted to hear. And to keep making sure that people was in the seat for this brother that wasn't Chris Cream, I had to make sure that people was there that would love Chris Cream because they deserve a platform too. But in my mind, it's like, it don't matter if this person is not as dynamic as Chris Cream and he's speaking to 20 people and Chris Cream is talking to 20 people. Maybe we can get almost every week close to 100 people or over 100 people there. Then that person that you said needs to be heard just as much as Chris Cream gets heard by more people. That's what I mean by saying I'm in love with the art of independent artists because it's not just spoken word. I love the rappers. I love the singers. That's not, you know, my singers come in just like you got Barbara Cherie and your network. Keisha don't come in there. Sam White will come in with a little dress on and you know, trying to be Rihanna or Beyonce. She come in there and they can sing gospel and say, well, this is a poem I wrote after they finished singing it. And everybody jumps up out of their seat and gives a standing ovation. And that's, you know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not that. I just wanted to interject. I just think part of hosting is promoting. And some
okay,
of my hosts
so
need to get on that.
All right. I'm back as the host, gentlemen. y'all talking.
And promoting.
But no, y'all brought up some good points. And so, you know, the closing, one thing we definitely want to understand, first thing Raymond brought out, that Shice followed up with, work hard. You know, that's the whole point. You know, that he works hard, and if you want to be successful, you work hard. Mm-hmm. But you want to also work smart, you know. That's the next step. And that's
okay,
what
I can work hard and then hire somebody else to work smart. How about that, Jackie?
Well, if you hire somebody to work smart, that's called working smart. But what is important is, though, in order, even if you want, when you hire somebody, because every good business does it. That's the thing we talk about. An artist is a business unto themselves. And nobody can do everything. Mm-hmm. But you do have to understand every part of your business so that you know who you should hire and, you know, what's the best part. That's why I came into the roles of a manager over, you know, a manager over different people. I came into that because because they don't understand what's the difference between a manager and a booking agent, and they don't understand the importance of each one, that a lot of artists are suffering because they don't understand, again, their business. You know, what's an agent? In acting, you'll find a few more agents than you will find you know, acting, they happen to have more agents than you'll find maybe in another field. But if you don't study your field, don't study the industry, and you don't know what should go where, then you don't know how to make the best decision. And that's what comes into working smarter.
Can I ask this question?
So that even when you bring people into your camp, because everybody should have a team. If you're an artist, you should have a team. And then the other thing, you know, what Raymond, you know, just talked about, you know, believing in yourself. I took my notes, Raymond, so I'm going to go over them. He said you should believe in yourself, put your best foot forward, and that's, again, in understanding your industry and different things. And my couple things I really want to tell, you know, especially spoken word artists. And I'm finding independent artists, too. I've been even working with a lot of hip-hop artists. Sometimes singers have a tendency to be a little bit better. But if you're new, just because you can sing and you go in a basement and record, that doesn't necessarily qualify if you want to move to a certain level. Because what happens is, I mean, you can record and you can sell CDs and people like you. It doesn't stop that. But if you do want radio play, then it has to be up to a certain standard. If you do want a label's attention, or you want people to review your work, if the production isn't good, and it's not that they're not listening to, their ears are so trained, they're going to go for that production quality. And if the quality is bad, they're going to make that association with your work. And it's just like anything, whether you're sending somebody a resume, you're sending them music, you got 20 seconds. You got 20 seconds to sell them. So that's another FYI. For all of those people that take 45 seconds or more to get to start your song or your spoken word, a lot of times you lose your audience.
Can I say
you
something?
Got 20 seconds. Yes, sir.
As someone who gets a lot of CDs and stuff, I would say someone in my position and higher up, you go, they generally listen for about 15 seconds to the first track. And if you don't get them on the first 15 seconds of the first track, you can hang it up. Now, me, I usually go 30 seconds. And if you haven't told me what tracks to play or whatever, I might go through the first three or four. Now, after listening for 30 seconds of four tracks, if I don't hear anything that makes me interested or really makes me think that my listeners would enjoy it, I normally dump it. Every once in a while, if somebody, you know, if I have a feeling that maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'll let the audience decide, you know, I might play it one time and see if I get any feedback. But for the most part, you know, with me, I'll listen about 30 to 40 seconds before I say, you know what, I got to move on. So you're right. I'm just saying you don't have a minute to grab that professional's ear.
What I'm hearing from Jackie and Raymond and what I know of Stephanie Renee, I'm thinking that maybe people like yourselves should get together and figure out, is this a workshop that y'all can sell to aspiring artists? Because, you know, whether it be spoken word singers or
development. Mm-hmm. I'm really thinking hard about putting together an artist development.
Because a lot of the information that we learn is through trial and error, and even in trial and error, we still don't get.
But see, here's the problem.
Well, you know what? One thing I'm thinking, you know, that's part of this show is always, development. I always look at everything as a potential product development. And that is something that I'm looking at. I mean, right now I'm at a, sometimes we just put in certain positions in life, you know. Like when my husband passed, my grandson's behavior went off the charts that I couldn't go back and do the 9-to-5. So it forced me into being an entrepreneur that I always was. So I could go back to the 9-to-5 and it forced me. And it seems like I'm back there again because I always like to fall on the safety net of a job, you know, at least to have something part-time. But I've been forced back into, you know, solely being dependent upon my entrepreneurial thing. And we do have a lot of assets and all. So I know I'm getting ready to do a series. It'll kick off in July here on Master Real Radio, and there will be a company e-book, the one that you can print out for Christmas in July, preparing your business for the holiday season. So whether you're an artist or whether your retail sales by July, you need to know what you plan to do for the holiday season. You should have it all mapped out for July. And most of our black businesses are nowhere near that. They don't start getting to it till October. And that, and you're totally behind the eight ball when you do that. So, and I got people talking about how to use technology. I got an SEO specialist coming up. You know, I'm the consultant and the planner. But what I would like to do, Raymond, based off of, you know, Shice, what he just said, I would like for us to not just do a standard workshop and seminar, but I actually want us to do an interactive. Because in me working hard, you know, to develop Shice, and, like, we don't have big budgets. We, you know, we don't have $5,000 to go out there and just lay down an album. And, you know, so we, like, you know, looking for different things. But I found some, huh?
I said it doesn't take $5,000, but you do have to know what's going on. For instance, let's say, you know, you want to present your CD to the Source for Unsigned Hype. And, you know, your CD is coming out. And, you know, officially you want your CD to come out in August. Okay, for the sake of purposes of getting in the Source, what you may want to do is put together one, maybe two tight tracks. That's all you need for the Source magazine.
Okay.
And then, you know, listen to what I'm saying. Have one or two tight tracks that are bumping and radio ready as far as, you know, as far as putting your best foot forward, and explain to them that the rest of the album will be ready, what is it now, June? The rest of the album will be ready in October, November. And the reason why you need to know that is because if your album is coming out in August, the Source magazine that's going to be on the stands in August is already done.
It's already up now.
The whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
They work almost 6 to 9 months in advance, all those major magazines.
That's
like
right.
That.
Thank you so much, Raymond. Thank you so much for that word. I have had labels, people come and tell me. He said, well, no, we get ready to do it. I was going to drop and then we're going to promote. I said, but you really should do it before. And, like, I actually have a whole thing planned. And it's like I'm really having a hard time getting artists to give me their campaign and design a campaign about what they're going to be doing September and October. I've been asking for it probably since about April. But for them to forecast, I'm like, are you planning on dropping? Then, hey, we need to work at it now. I said, this way when we go on tour, whether you're actually on that stage or not, we're preparing those audiences, and they're going to be prepared that if you come out between a series of advertising, you can move units. So, but what I would really like for us to get together, Raymond, is to do an interactive seminar, not just with the information, but there are producers. There's some great producers around who are really working with us. Like, I have some people, every guy in my church is going to work with us. I think Mel and I will try to hit over there tomorrow, you know, to evaluate. Franz is the bomb. Bill Jolly. He's willing to work with us. So it's like a few different producers that are willing to work. Veronica Underwood, she is like the songbird of North Philly. She has, her ministry is to take young people off the street and teach them to sing. And Veronica sings so good, she can almost sing Patty Under the Table. That's how good Veronica is. She is part of the Sound of Philadelphia. So it's not like she's a slouch. But that's a ministry.
Okay.
She gets some young drug dealers off the corner and teach them how to sing and let them find out they got a voice. And she does it for free out of her home.
Wow.
So she's working to, like, raise money. And if we bring, like, these type of people and you and some of your sources and we do an interactive seminar, then we don't just talk, but, like, a creative. And I actually found something like that online. Like, you bring your words, you bring your music, you bring your this. We be there to have people copyright their stuff on site, you know. Like,
yeah.
We're going to put The coffee and seminar is going to cover some copyright, some of this. It'll cover some of these services to make sure your member asks it. You ask certain things. So when they come out with some tangible things. We have a crazy creative session, but people can come out with something tangible, and then you have a radio show. I told you I have a few other people with radio shows that say they will play it, and they're all over the country.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So let's do this, you know? Let's do this for the fall.
I mean, I have to get ready and go, but one of the reasons why I would like to do something like that is because then once you have the person there and the track, you're not trying to teach them on the fly. Because the worst thing I hear people do is play part of a song or play a song, and then now you done put them on Front Street, which is not the, you know, put this week's song on Front Street, and now you on the radio, you know, talking about how bad the record is. The good thing about what you're proposing is that somebody can come, break a song for people who are professional and have professional experience, and people can say, well, this is what you might want to do. This is the best way that you can market this particular song. I remember I did a talent show. I've been a judge for a talent show a number of times, and I always wonder, like, what, because there are people out there who can sing, but sometimes they have the right voice, but they're singing the wrong song or the wrong style of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it, like, for instance, Chrisette Michelle. You know, I've heard people who have that torch-like voice, that American songbook voice, but they're trying to do Rihanna songs. And it doesn't work, not because they can't sing, but because you know, God gave you a style that's more Sarah Vaughan than Rihanna. So, you know.
Yeah. And I find that with a lot of younger people, they look up to their idols. They look up to their idols. So I want to be like Rihanna and Longo, but they don't realize that their voice, it's not a Rihanna voice, but just because they idol them, they try to mimic that person.
Right.
But they actually have their own style, their own way. But a young lady, I think she actually gave up. I feel bad because she gave up the music industry. I think she gave up doing it. And she had it, but she was trying to be a dancer, and she doesn't have the rhythm to dance well. But she's trying to do, like, just like all the ones, you know, the popular singers do. But if she would have embraced her geekiness, her awkwardness, because she's still nice looking, she has a style of her own. And if she would have embraced that, then she did have a voice. And like you said, if we could have found songs to fit her, instead of, but, you know, some, you know, all those people behind her trying to mold her, make her something. But instead
of trying
to bring out the best of who she is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, and I have to get ready to go to probably not long after this compact. That's why you need people who you're working with who know what they're doing. And so many times I see these young people, they work with quote-unquote producers or publicists who only know about one type of music. So if all you listen to is what's hot on the block all day, every day, no, you wouldn't know that this girl, you wouldn't know who Sarah Vaughan is, so you wouldn't be able to say, okay, you know what, you have a great voice, but you know what, let's take this, instead of taking the song that you're doing right now, instead of trying to do Rude Boy, let's switch it up. You know, there's this song by Loretta Lynn, Stand By Your Man. Try that, you know, and you know, if you've never listened to country music, you know, you would have no idea that maybe that's the route that they should go. And then, you know, the country music market is a lucrative market. The rock music market is a lucrative market. You know, there's more than just the, 15 to 22-year-old market when it comes to music. As a matter of fact, that's the fastest failing market in music right now. The 15 is, you know, early 20s. They're the ones who are buying the least records right now. So
I know. And country music is one of the biggest markets. It's the biggest thing over in Africa. Country music is one of the biggest rising. Yeah, country music is the biggest thing over in Africa. Who knew? I'm surprised when I found that out.
It's a global market. The market is bigger than just your block.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's why a lot of artists have to educate themselves.
Yeah. So, Raymond, what I'm going to propose, the last couple months, I guess, was X Blue Rain, and she actually started a magazine called Sueyu, Spoken Word Artists Unleashed. It's a real nice magazine and done professionally like a magazine. It's a magazine about spoken word, but it's done like if it was a source or something. And it's an online magazine, and that's one of the partners now with the Master Grill Project. You know, we're a partner with them. That's part of the advertising, when I say, like, across various sources. And we have the rolling out. I have Trendsetter to Trendsetter. We have all of these sources, and we're going to just literally bring them together. And I know with X, because she's not listening now, she'll listen to the show. But they really want to come to Philly, so we're going to really want to work out for a fall exchange between St. Louis. They're in St. Louis and, you know, the Philly, South Jersey area. So we want to schedule this. I think, you know, I'll talk to you about what you feel is a good time, like, for this, the beginning of the year, like, for records to break. But I'd probably like to do this, like, November, early December. I would, you know, to give us time to start marketing it now and to get the sponsors and everything to cover it. But we're going to do it not just in our area. If we're going to do a Philly, South Jersey, because South Jersey can get to Philly. We'll do a Central to both of them. But then we're going to take it over to St. Louis in partnership with Sueyu Magazine.
Okay.
Then we're also going to connect this to this 18-city tour that I have going on. So that can be like a prize or outcome as part of that. So,
I apologize, but I have to get ready to go.
Yeah, we both do. But I want to thank you, Raymond. You just said, first, thank you for who you are, for your stand, and that you really, you know, are here to support. Because there's so many people who take advantage of people, but you provide a real platform, and you're a person that's helping make the spoken word industry viable and showing how it can work with all other industries.
Right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to come on your show and talk candidly about what I do. I really don't get an opportunity to talk. I deal with everybody as a straight shooter, but I don't really have an opportunity to give a lot of people individual conversation because I'm hosting, or I have to move.